Hello and welcome to Lush Tums, the podcast, supporting you on your mothering journey during pregnancy, birth and beyond. Through yoga, education and community, we enable every woman we work with to connect more deeply to herself and her own innate wisdom. Find your tribe as you become a parent, making positive, informed choices that are right for you, because Lush Tums believes everything has a place. Join the two Claires as we connect, laugh and learn. In this space, everything is welcome. Hi everyone, welcome to Lush Tums the podcast. I'm Claire McGill.
And I'm Claire Maddalena.
Today we thought we would treat you to three Claires for the price of two. Our guest today, Claire Russell Byrne, has been a friend and teacher on our postnatal yoga trainings for the last 5 years. Claire became a yoga teacher in 2007 after a career as a decorative artist. She became a mother in her 40s, having diastasis recti after both pregnancies, and she discovered that she needed more than a classical yoga practice to recover. Through her work, she was meeting and teaching ladies who had all sorts of postnatal issues. So she consulted and took courses with women's health physios, explored work of movement experts in this field, and tried a variety of postnatal recovery programs, eventually finding the Restore Your Core program, and then qualifying as a Restore Your Core teacher with Lauren O'Hayan. Claire says, "I don't see yoga as a set of specific postures to fit into a sequence, but the mindfulness of the movement, the exploration and awareness as yoga. I enjoy bringing in exercises that facilitate functional movement in everyday life and beyond." Welcome, Claire. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So we'd love to ask you, what was your first experience of yoga?
So I actually came to yoga fairly late. I was probably around about 30 at the time. So it was kind of like 1999, 2000. And although I had been introduced to yoga philosophy and meditation and Sanskrit and some of those things as a child, which is a bit unusual, at the school that I went to, it was very, it was done in quite a sort of preachy way. So I totally rebelled against it at the time. I think those early experiences at school as well, where I loved movement, you know, I absolutely loved it. I did loads of gymnastics as a child, loved lots of sport, loved art. We did lots of life drawing at school as well, studying the physical form. That was a little bit later, sort of during O-level and stuff like that. But we were pushed quite a lot to do running and sport, and it was quite tough. We were sort of trained to be quite resilient. So when I came to yoga, it was just like quite a different experience, because I'd sort of learned how to tough it out, I'd learned how to push myself, I'd learned how to move through a lot of discomfort. It wasn't just the physical practice, it was just I felt quite peaceful afterwards. I felt very mentally and emotional calm, and I suppose there was a different element, a different communication that was just had a little bit more self-care aspect to it. I did choose the most sort of challenging type of yoga that I could find. I think I would have got totally bored if I just jumped into a really restful, restorative, meditative class at that point. So I was naturally drawn towards, you know, like Ashtanga, Vinyasa, all those kind of practices. I needed to work a little bit. I felt like I had to work to earn the rest. You know, I liked the contrast between the sort of the push and the rest. And at that time in my life, it felt that in order to allow myself to rest, I had to put in some hard work, if that makes sense. And it wasn't until I had my babies that I completely sort of went through a bit of a shift in my practice, really.
What were your pregnancies like?
So my pregnancies went quite sort of smoothly. I felt good. I did lots of yoga. I carried on with the dynamic practice, actually. I did do some pregnancy yoga classes, but I still also just more or less continued. I was still teaching. I was teaching when I was pregnant. So I carried on as normal, really. Didn't really have too many aches or pains or anything going on. So yeah, pregnancies were good. It was more sort of like the recovery process that was a little bit different for me.
So what did you discover then, Claire, with that recovery process?
It was a bit of a shock to go from sort of feeling totally normal and feeling quite strong and active and just, you know, continuing as normal, really, just but with a baby, with a bump. Well, I hemorrhaged after both my births. So I lost a lot of blood. I had blood transfusions, anemia. It was quite hard to suddenly sort of be in that position, just to feel so different and to feel so debilitated afterwards. And then to have the diastasis as well. So I had diastasis recti. I didn't really know what that was. It wasn't something that was diagnosed. I could see that there was something funny going on in my abdominal wall. I could see my digestive system moving around. And what it actually is the abdominal muscles, everyone has a diastasis during pregnancy. You know, in late pregnancy, the belly has to stretch in order to make room for the baby. But, you know, for most people, those muscles are going to come back together. But for me, that didn't happen. So I was left with this sort of very lax connective tissue. Didn't feel very strong. I wasn't really walking around much because I was anemic and I was exhausted, and you know, just walking across the room was exhausting. So I had a lot of rest period, but yeah, I knew that something was up, something wasn't quite right. And so I just began to sort of do a little bit of research and do some reading and Googling, and I think I sort of worked out that, you know, that's what it was. But that was just a small part, really, you know, of it at the time, because you're sort of dealing with all the other stuff as well. I wasn't even really thinking too much about that, probably until a little bit later, when I was getting more into kind of like 4, 5, 6 months postnatal, and I thought, hang on a minute, I still look really, really pregnant. I still had a huge tummy, and I had a very sort of like, it was like a lot of pressure. It was like a very hard, big round ball, and I just sort of thought, this, you know, what's going on? This isn't right.
Did you feel that you kind of wanted to sort of bounce back to the level that you were at pre-birth, you know, in terms of your strength and your fitness and your ability? Did you feel that there was a sort of a need or a compulsion to do that, to get back to normal? And was it a bit of a shock that normal might be quite different for a while?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think for the first time, I felt very much not in control of my body. And especially, you know, thinking back to what I said about sort of doing a lot of, having done quite a lot of sports and having that sort of level of, oh, it's all right, I can do this. I've just got to tough it out. I can keep going. I can push. And it's not like that postnatally. You know, you can't just suddenly think, right, okay. I mean, you might think, right, what do I need to do to sort this out? I think there was a sort of element of that. But there was soon a realization in a sense of like, okay, this is not a quick fix here. This isn't something that I can't just be disciplined and just think, right, I'll do this many exercises. It was difficult. It was kind of like absorbing that. And I think also, you know, you definitely go through a thing of, you know, did I do something wrong? You know, what did I do? Maybe you start wanting to understand why. And then I think, you know, there's quite a lot of fear that's really, really normal that comes up for women as well, because if you have a condition like a diastasis or a prolapse where you're actually feeling organs, you know, moving into the vaginal canal after birth, you know, which can sometimes, you know, exist alongside a diastasis. I didn't have that, but, you know, later was meeting women who were experiencing prolapse as well. You know, there's a lot of fear. You don't want to make it worse. Mm-hmm. And so there was a kind of paralysis that happened. I was doing some yoga and I thought, oh, I'll just tune into my body. I know my body. I've done some yoga. I'll just listen in. But I started reading and I started sort of seeing the lists, the not-do lists. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do plank. Don't do sit-ups. Don't do down dog. Don't do back bends. Don't spinally extend. I don't know. I just read like this huge list, and I kind of wanted a list, to be honest. I wanted somebody to give me the list. Like, don't do any of this and just do all of this, and then you can fix it. You know, that's kind of what I wanted. But it didn't work like that. it doesn't happen like that. And it's different for everyone. That's what I learned. So I suppose what I'd say, you know, to anybody who's listening, who's in that position, that education is really key. And there are reasons why, you know, we do read those lists, and it's not that those lists don't need to be taken heed of. You know, it, the last thing that you want to do when you've got, you know, when you've just had a baby is to jump into a really heavy exercise program. But it's kind of, I think the blanket statements, you just have to kind of know that it's about understanding, it's more about understanding how you're actually moving. So it's about sort of understanding what you're doing, why you're moving. And for that, you need some support, really. You need some support, some guidance. And so finding the right person to give you that guidance, to give you the education on how you are managing pressure, the intra-abdominal pressure. So when, you know, when the tummy muscles are, you know, apart and you've got that thin connective tissue, then there's a lot of pressure moving into the tissues of the abdominal wall. And, you know, there can be pressure going down into the pelvic floor. So how you're moving, how you're breathing, how you're lifting your baby up, all those things that you're doing in everyday life is as important as, you know, the way that you're moving during your exercise class. So I just felt that I need to understand more. And maybe what I need to do is actually step out of the yoga world and just connect in with the women's health physios. And we know now a lot that wouldn't think of seeing a women's health physio after having a baby, because it's something that we have to pay for unless we are referred because we have got an issue. But even with a diastasis, you may not, your GP may not diagnose that, or it may not be diagnosed at your 6-week check. So you may not get a referral. It's just, there's so many women that slip through the net that don't know that they've got something going on until further down the line, or don't know until they go to their exercise class after their 6-week check. And then they're suddenly, they feel something that's not quite right. So yeah, I just suddenly became aware of that there was a need, really. There was a need to support women in this area, and that there was a bit of a gap. There wasn't a bridge, you know, between getting back to the normal exercise and having a baby.
So that's a word I've heard you use before when talking about this kind of period in a woman's life. You've just had a baby, you've had your 6-week check, and there's this gap of time before returning to, you know, whatever semblance of exercise you want to do. And I've heard you describe this period of time as rehabilitation. And it gives it another kind of level of seriousness, really, as to where our minds need to be and how we need to treat our bodies with a bit of care and respect and go slowly. So I just wonder if you could kind of unpack that word rehabilitation, and what does that really mean for new mums, when actually most of us just want to bounce back, you know, hit the mat, hit the Zumba, hit the running shoes, you know, and actually we really need to be rehabbing for a while. What does that really mean and look like?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it might be different for different people. You know, we're all coming to our postnatal recovery in a very different way. So for some, the journey may be quicker than others. You know, my journey felt quite long, but I came to motherhood really late in my 40s. My tissues are probably quite different in my body. You know, they're not quite as bouncy backy as they might have been before. But yes, you know, there's this feeling of shoulds and pushing ourselves. And if you think back, if you've had a baby, you know, how many times do you feel like you should be doing this class and you should be doing that class and pushing yourself and feeling the need to push? So it's a short time when you've come through it. It's such a, you look back on it and it's a very short time. It doesn't feel like it at the time. if we can just take a little bit more time to go a little bit more easy on ourselves, you know, we're not going to, I don't think we'll ever look back and think, oh, I wish I'd done more during my postnatal recovery. I wish I'd achieved a bit more. Often it's like, I wish I'd done less. I mean, isn't that how, I don't know how you both feel, but, you know, I didn't really need to do some of the things that I was trying to do. And it takes time. The body needs rest. It needs gentle movements. And the tissues take time to regenerate as well in our body. I think what's difficult is we see the photographs of the celebrities. We are sold this quick fix, this bounce back. You know, we feel like we're supposed to be able to do that. And if we don't do that, then, you know, have we failed? You know, is there something wrong? No, it's just that we're not shown all those other pictures about how long it can really take and that it takes as long as it takes. And in fact, it's still, you know, it's kind of ongoing. Even after you've had your babies many years ago, some women don't realise that they've got a diastasis and they're 20 years postnatal, so they haven't even had that process of finding out in the early days. But it's never too late. I think that's the important thing to remember. It's never, ever, ever too late to rehabilitating, to going back, laying the foundation. And I think what's really positive about it is, and I think probably that's where I feel like I am a bit now, is that I'm probably a bit stronger in a different way now. So I think some of the patterns that I had previously, even doing all that stuff that felt like strong stuff and handstands and all the acrobatics and stuff like that, I don't think I was quite as connected to my deep core as I am now, you know, and I may well have had a lot of tension and not much yield in that abdominal wall. So maybe my body just helpfully stretched in the midline to make room for my baby because my other muscles were just very, very, very tight.
That's really interesting. So, you know, you had a acrobatic, gymnastic-y, yoga vinyasa, you know, quite athletic time beforehand. Do you see a kind of pattern between people that are very kind of strong externally, you know, with dancers or runners or gymnasts? Is there a kind of correlation between that kind of physique and diastasis? Is there a connection?
I think it can happen to all different body types. So there's not one particular type, but it can definitely, you know, it's always quite surprising, isn't it, for people when they think, oh, but I'm really strong and I'm really fit. And how come I've suddenly this has happened? And then we start to understand it's not about being strong, you know, that's going to prevent certain things. It's more about balance and yield in the tissues, you know. And, you know, I think about looking at the body in terms of sort of things being like tensioned and tuned like an instrument, you know, like a string being sort of too tightly wound on a guitar string. Our bodies are just going to be adapting to whatever input it's receiving. So if you're a gymnast, it's going to have all that input, and that's, you know, that's how it's going to respond to that. And I think it's interesting when you see men that have diastasis, what's going on there. You know, there's an imbalance possibly in the abdominal wall there where we can see that certain muscles have been really worked and they're pulling. Yeah, so it's interesting sort of. And then postnatally, the recovery can be so individualized because it's really about finding that balance actually, and looking at that person and seeing how we can bring back tension in a kind of in a balanced way, you know, to see their patterns, to see the patterns that they were doing before. And so it's really not uncommon to see a lot of really strong people then having quite a superficial contraction of their abdominals when they start doing core exercises postnatally.
Maybe we should go back to your recovery journey. We know that it's an individual experience for each person. What did you start to look at first of all? What was your mindset at the beginning, and did it change as you were going through your period of recovery?
Yeah, I think mindset is really key. As I said, you know, some people are going to feel a lot of fear. I felt fear, definitely. I had a kind of paralysis as I was reading a lot of stuff. I don't think I'll move at all because I don't even know how to move anymore. Yeah, learning to move, and I suppose being educated and knowing the signs to look out for, and knowing that it's going to take time. I think it's really helpful to be in community with other women who are experiencing similar things so that you can support each other, and you know, you can see others further down the line. You can start to think of yourself, oh, okay, there is, you were like this, and actually you've improved, and you're like, wow, look, you know, you've but you see that it the road may not be straightforward. It may not just be a straight line. It might be for some, but there may be some twists and turns. And I think that sometimes with healing, we think that it's going to just happen in one direction, and that everything is a progression to getting better, getting better, getting better. But every day is different. Our environment is different. Things happen to us that are different. So we are going to have some good days and some bad days. Even now, I feel strong. I feel like the tissue is, I can do most of the things that I want to do. I mean, I'm upping things now, actually, in terms of my exercise. So it's almost like I have to now put in a little bit more work. But even now I could eat something, because there's often digestive issues that can be related with diastasis recti, because the abdominal wall is not really holding, you know, your digestive system in the same way. But if I eat something that I'm a bit intolerant to, I can still look a bit pregnant, you know, and feel incredibly sort of like, oh gosh, you know, and a bit down on that. But then that goes, you know, the body deals with it, and I'm okay. But I know that now. And just the same as some ladies will have improvement and get so much stronger, and especially with things like prolapse, and they'll have no symptoms. And then maybe during their period or during ovulation, they'll have symptoms again. And they might think, oh, what have I done? You know, it's not getting better. But we are in this state of flux. You know, we're influenced by our cycle, by so many things. So I think it's really empowering to know that, mindset wise, just be prepared for fluctuations and change.
So when you speak about the kind of symptoms that people might want to be keeping an eye out for, and you've mentioned some digestive issues and feeling or looking like you're still kind of 4 months pregnant, but what are the other things that people could be looking out for which might, you know, encourage them to go along and see a women's health physio or come along to, you know, a one-to-one with yourself?
So I think if you have a diastasis, then it's great to sort of know when your abdominal wall is doming. So when you're, you know, and you'll see that often if you're sitting up, then it might all come to a point, and there might be a sort of pushing forward of your abdominal wall. So your superficial muscles are kind of helping you out to get up, but your deep core isn't connecting. So it's really important to sort of be able to work with somebody that can show you how to manage that pressure, because what you don't want to be doing is kind of doing that all the time and then just pushing into the tissues.
So like from lying down to sitting up, or from lying in the bath and then sitting up in the bath.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the bath is a real classic one, because that is, you know, everyone says don't do a sit-up, and you can try, and we can advise our postnatal ladies to roll to the side as much as possible, and especially early days. But there comes a certain point, doesn't there, where you're kind of like, I need to sit up in the bath. But suddenly your baby's awake in the night, you've got to suddenly jump and sit up, you know. So we kind of need to find ways where we can really support ourselves in that kind of stuff. So working with, you know, moving on the exhale, and really sort of working on the whole, I suppose, bringing synchronization to the whole core. So I see the core as a whole system. You know, we can separate out the core into parts. We can look at different parts, but in fact, it really works all together as a system. You know, you've got your diaphragm at the top, pelvic floor at the bottom, abdominal wall at the front, you know, spine at the back. We can go into details of muscles and stuff, but it's kind of, that is the abdominal canister. And, you know, the pelvic floor and the diaphragm have a relationship where they are in synchronization with each other. And so knowing how that is working is really key. Knowing if you're observing, if you're really holding a lot of belly tension and you're pulling your tummy in, which is really common, because, you know, lots of us might not be feeling comfortable with how our tummy is looking. Or we may just have a habit of doing that anyway. But that kind of tension might throw the system off. So little signs like that, you know, am I holding abdominal tension, is that disrupting the system of integration between the diaphragm and the pelvic floor? When I'm getting out of a chair, am I holding my breath in order to create stability in my core? When I'm picking something up, am I holding my breath? And can we start to use an exhale on exertion? So I'm sure that, you know, lots of people might be familiar with using the exhale on exertion. When, you know, when people play tennis and they kind of they make the sound, don't they? Because we, when we talk, it's like an exhale, and you can hear the tennis players release some sound as they exert and they hit that ball. And it's funny because when you sort of have to shout, if you shout at your children, if you call up to your children, you say, dinner's ready, you can notice how your abdominal wall is reacting to that. Is it pushing out or is it moving back in? There's lots of little, you know, there's lots of little assessments we can do. And so you might need somebody, and yes, you can go to a women's health physio and they can be great at assessing what's going on in the pelvic floor as well, which is really, really useful. I'd always advise somebody to go and have a check with a women's health physio. But as a movement teacher, we can't see what's going on in the pelvic floor. But what we can see is we can see a lot of how somebody is breathing. You know, as yoga teachers, it's great because we can focus so much. You know, people are almost expecting us to bring a breath focus to our classes. So I would say that, you know, learning how to breathe is through in a way that is not going to create intra-abdominal pressure is really a key thing.
And I guess something we always say is, you know, when you exhale, that's also when you're laughing, coughing and sneezing. So you kind of want these lovely pelvic floor muscles to kick in and respond so that we're not going to have a little wee when we laugh and cough and sneeze.
Yeah. And it is designed, you know, it's a reflexive system and it is designed to support you. It just might be a little bit off, you know, and so bringing it back, because the diaphragm is, you know, we can really focus on bringing it back off with the breath and using the exhale and timing. I see a lot of people sort of moving before they've even had a chance to sort of breathe. So I do a lot of work on sort of synchronization, timing, waiting for the breath. And it's not that you have to spend the rest of your life, okay, I'm going to breathe now and pick something up, you know, forever. But this is kind of like retraining the system to respond to the task at hand. And working with the breath is great because if we just always cue the pelvic floor, then we're not training the body to respond to the task at hand because, you know, there's going to be a different, activation that's needed to pick up a heavy suitcase than it's needed to pick up a small shopping bag. But if you exhale, you know, you can train the core to reflexively engage to support you. But it's not just about the core. I mean, it's about the whole body. So, I mean, that's the center, but really the approach that I've learned is very much a whole body approach. So it's kind of like what's happening above and what's happening below? How are we moving? How are we standing? I see a lot of tension, especially postnatally, around the rib cage. And if you think of a tube of toothpaste, if you're squeezing it from the top, almost like your ribs are at the top, that is going to be pushing the toothpaste down. That's sending pressure down. So we can do so many lovely things in our classes that facilitate more mobility in the rib cage and the upper part of the body that's actually going to be supporting their core because it's going to be balancing the pressure more. And it's and then the same with the, you know, maybe some people are going to be in a very sort of, you know, they're in those nurturing positions postnatally, feeding their babies, curled in with their babies in quite a sort of rounded spine. And, you know, we can bring more balance to the pelvis and the pelvic floor by really kind of giving them some nice juicy exercises to support their kind of posterior chain, all those muscles at the back of their body.
So going back to your journey, Claire, you know, what did you discover along the way? What were some high points? What were some low points? And how did you get through those moments?
It's a very gradual process. I don't really remember sort of there being a specific point where it was just like, oh wow, you know, like a really sort of obvious jump. It was just kind of, it just felt like I was just kind of moving on, and then one day it was just like, wow, this is very different now. You know, it's like all those tiny little changes had added up. And when I stopped sort of focusing on the fixing aspect, and I became a little bit more just interested in kind of just bringing more balance to my movements and noticing how I was moving, and just intelligent loading, obviously, of the core, and focusing on some core strengthening exercises, but just bringing myself into a different kind of relationship around it, I suppose. I just, you know, it just sort of one day I just remember kind of like bending down, picking something up and just feeling stronger, you know, and just thinking, oh wow, this, you know, this work, this is happening, this is, something's changing now finally. And low points, I think the low points for me really were very tied in postnatally, were very tied in with the lack of sleep. That was probably like my lowest ebb. And I could probably do a whole other podcast for you on sleep. But I think that, you know, it's huge. We're very sleep deprived. And when you when you're not sleeping, everything feels difficult. And you can't even do your exercises and get on your mat because you can barely sort of function and get everything else done. So in that instance, you know, I think that it's just about not worrying, actually, if you're not doing your exercises, and just doing what you can do at home, just being aware of your, of what you're doing while you're moving when you're not on your mat, you know, just notice it. Can you carry your child on your other hip? Are you feeling like you're always carrying? You know, we do that a lot in the classes. We have that opportunity, the babies, to do lots of like mixing it up on both sides so that we give more input, you know, one side of the body to the other side. So just giving yourself a lot of self-care. And I think probably my sleep training and working with people who have sleep issues really helped me to bring in a whole new level of self-care. That was probably like my training in, that's where I learned to sort of really listen to when I needed to stop, and to understand how my energy was during the day. And I used to kind of like plan my looking after my baby a little bit around when I'd have the most energy in the day and when I'd have the least energy in the day, and make sure I was home and not at some sort of swimming class with the baby when I knew that I was going to be hitting that low dip.
That's a really good suggestion, because, you know, what tends to happen is that, you know, people will spend quite a lot of time and money investing in themselves when they're pregnant, and then when their babies come, you know, they might do a tiny little postnatal course, you know, for a term while the babies are little. But then actually it's all about Monday we've got baby massage, Tuesday we've got baby swimming, Wednesday we've got sing inside, and there's all these amazing activities for the babies, but then the mums can tend to get a bit sidelined. And actually, you know, we're meant to be postnatal, you know, for 2 years, but listening to you, it's kind of like we are postnatal forever. And actually we need to prioritise that self-care and mummy rehab and checking in with how we're moving so that we, you know, we're not sidelined.
Yeah, and I think just understanding a little bit of how your energy will be during the day in terms of circadian rhythm, that you're going to, even if you've had no sleep, you'll probably be able to get out in the morning. I mean, I know sometimes some mums can't, and gosh, you know, don't push it if you can't, but you could, you often have that bit more energy in the morning. But come 3 o'clock, that's real low time. So, you know, I used to just try and do a little restorative at that time of day. And I still do that if I'm struggling, you know, if I'm going through a stressful period.
A little legs up the wall.
Yeah, exactly. And just listening. I mean, I don't think in the early days I was listening to even like when I was hungry, when I needed to go to the loo, when I was thirsty, sort of ignoring all those basic human needs to prioritize looking over your child. And I think self-care actually starts a little bit there, doesn't it? It's kind of like, if you're thirsty, go and get yourself that water now. And don't put it off if you can. And make that sandwich or pack lunch for yourself. Don't just make it for your children.
That's a good tip. I like that one. I can remember in the very early days, I couldn't distinguish feeling tired from feeling hungry. I was so kind of muddled in my own body that I would reach for the food when I wasn't hungry, but I was really, really tired, and I felt like I needed the food.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I suppose some of the signs are actually confusing. Like you say, even the signals, we're not necessarily hearing them, are we?
I still get muddled with that now, Claire, to be honest.
That's just what I was going to say, because sometimes when I'm doing sleep work with people and I sort of say, are you aware of your signs of tiredness in the evening? Because often we don't go to bed when we're tired. And some people sort of say, what does that feel like? How do you feel when you feel like that? You know, and I was kind of like, yeah, actually, we're not used to always acknowledging our body cues. So it's not such an easy thing to do.
And I suppose when we've got, you know, we're talking about mums here, you know, you finally get the baby down at 7 or, you know, whatever time. And then that final hour or two or three or four feels like your precious time of the day, where you want to have a conversation with your other adult in the house, or you want to sit on the sofa and watch your favourite episode. And often I will do that and procrastinate from going to bed, even though going to bed at 8:30 is probably exactly what I need to do. I'm kind of grasping onto that little hour of me time, which might not really be useful sometimes. Just go to bed. And if you had one message then to say to the women coming up behind you, the women that are pregnant, the women that have just had babies, or maybe they've got 4-year-olds or 10-year-olds or 20-year-olds, and, you know, they're not sure if that belly is DR or prolapse or any of these other things, what might you say to all those lovely people?
That it's never too late, that we are amazing. I have heard so many inspiring, amazing stories of healing from women that I'm constantly blown away with just what people are capable of. So I think that, you know, have faith that if you are going through something difficult that you're recovering from, it is totally possible to improve it and to actually get back to things that you love doing.
So we like to ask all of our guests for this statement, I'm a yoga teacher, but where we get a chance to say something that perhaps doesn't align with people's perception of what it means to be a yoga teacher. So have you got an I'm a yoga teacher, but?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, that. I just think that, you know, yeah, because I don't know what people think about yoga teachers. I think they think they're really calm, and maybe they do think they're a bit angelic, although the original yogis were actually really rebellious and doing a lot of, you know, bad things if you look into some of the history. So I just feel like I'm a yoga teacher, but I still get stressed out. I still go off track sometimes. You know, I still forget that drinking 3 margaritas when I'm out with some friends is a bad idea.
What about you, Claire? Have you got a guilty yoga teacher confession?
I am finding it really hard to roll my mat out at the moment and do self-practice. I feel like I've done so much on screen and on Zoom. I just feel a bit yogaed out and just need a week of not doing it, just going for walks and doing other stuff, just to come back a bit more refreshed. So I'm a yoga teacher, but my mat is rolled up in the corner of the room gathering dust at the moment. I can't wait to get back on it, but just not right now. I'm just not ready for it.
So I'm a yoga teacher, but I went to my first yoga class in real life for goodness knows how long last week, and instantly found my competitive edge again with everyone else that was in the room. And again, I can hear this other voice saying, be curious, not judgmental, whether it's a judgment of good or bad, like, let that go, just enjoy the movement, be in the body. But I was very much like, what are they doing over there? Yeah, I think my twist is a bit deeper than theirs, that's okay. Oh, check out this woman in front of me, she's rocking the balance. No, I'm nothing like that. Oh, I want a balance like her. All that self-talk, I mean, does it ever go away? Do we ever stop? Does the ego ever just take a little break and sit on the naughty step for a bit? Mine doesn't. Mine's very much present.
I think you're allowed to have some weird sort of feelings about suddenly being in a yoga room with other people again. It's going to be a bit strange, isn't it? I mean, that's it. We're just all coming back into the world. So you're going to be looking around the room. You're going to be totally distracted because it's like, there are people. There's someone in front of me. I'm balancing really well and I haven't got my balance. You know, it's not, it's, we're going to take time to adjust back into being in the outside world again.
Yeah, I've definitely found my first week teaching last week and this week absolutely exhausting. And usually you get so much energy from teaching, but I think it was picking up everyone else's excitement and anxieties about being back in the real world together. And it just wiped me out, floored me.
It was very nice. I taught my first pregnancy class last night and it was lovely having a conversation with everyone after class and checking in and seeing faces, and the joy of being in a room with someone and seeing how they move, seeing how they breathe, seeing and feeling the energy, and letting that help guide where the practice was going was such a lovely feeling. I have really missed that. I do like teaching online as well, though. I think there's definitely been some benefits to that, and I'm glad that one of my classes is going to stay online going forward because it's worked really well for this particular group. But it was very special to be back in a room with people again. I think I really came away quite buzzing from other people's energy, which was quite nice. And so I'm looking forward to doing some more real life classes as well, and some more real life classes for myself, because it was very nice to be a student in the room again, back on the mat, letting someone else guide the way. I think sometimes as teachers we forget how nice it is to be on the other side. Mm. And it was lovely. I really, really enjoyed it. We also like to ask, what are you grateful for in your life right now?
I think I'm just grateful for being in the position that I'm in, doing the work that I do. I'm really very happy doing the work that I do. I love doing the work that I do, and I feel just, I'm grateful for all the teachers. I'm grateful for the journey that brought me here. Probably wasn't grateful when I was on it along the way, but wouldn't be doing what I was doing if I hadn't been on that journey, and I would not have met all the amazing teachers that I've met on the way. So I am grateful for the path of recovery that led me to the work that I'm doing today.
What about you, Claire?
Well, I'm grateful for the week ahead. This is being recorded just at the start of half term, and we as a little family are going to be gallivanting off down to Cornwall. And I can't quite believe we're going away on a holiday after, you know, this kind of weird 14 months that we've all had. To even say those words out loud, I'm still a bit tentative. We're meant to be going tomorrow. Fingers crossed nothing changes overnight. But yeah, I'm really grateful to get away and have some adventures with the family.
It's lovely.
And you, Claire, what are you grateful for this week?
Horrible histories on CBBC. It's united us as a family. We all love it. It's hilarious. It's informative. And it deals with lots of singing parodies, which is just my bag. So, and because we've not really watched them before, I've got about 7 series, I think, to catch up on with the kids. And I've learned so much already about Cleopatra that I had no idea about. It's reignited my love of history that I just take it for granted that you always love learning. And I'd forgotten just how much I really enjoyed that subject at school. And now sort of learning it again with my kids through a puppet rat and some hilarious comedy actors. Yeah, that's what I'm grateful for today.
So one of my favourite questions to ask people is, if you could be in any point of history, in any place in the world, even just for 3 months, to have a little explore around and live a life there for a while, what would you choose?
For me, I'd always have to go with the kind of Georgian period, and I just have been obsessed with Jane Austen for so long. I've just always wanted to step into that world. I mean, don't get me wrong, bit of a snob, but I'd definitely want to be one of the upper classes and waltzing around in the balls and looking at the marriage mark. Bridgerton's helped with this also. I don't think they were quite as hygienic and well turned out as the cast of Bridgerton or the BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, but I would love to just step into that world and see what it's like and really just have a nose. Yeah, to visit, wouldn't want to stay there.
Yeah, just to visit. Sure.
How about you, Claire? I've got no idea, really.
I've got quite a few. I'd obviously love to do kind of proper ancient Egypt. That's always a big pull of interest for me. I thought we might do Egyptology at one point. Just so fascinating. And then probably, you know, North America before you know, white people got there and did all the stuff they did, you know, so actually with Native American Indian tribes and, yeah, just all of that incredible culture and learning and nature and way of living. I'd love to go and explore that.
I think I just want to be able to have one of those time machines so that I can pop in and out. What is it, Cat Weasel? Is that what he was doing? Cat Weasel is this really old-fashioned 70s program and he was just traveling through time, different time zones. So I can have a bit of everything.
Nice.
I can't lose. Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like people to know about the work you're doing at the moment if someone is perhaps experiencing a prolapse or a DR and they want to find you to work with them?
Yeah, they can check out my website, www.clairerussellburns.co.uk. So I do quite a lot of online assessment sessions. I was doing that before the lockdown anyway. So I do like a sort of package of classes where I can work with people, give them some exercises and check in again with them. So working together, as well as supporting them with an online program as well. That's an option. Got a studio space at home, so I do see people in person now again, which is great. And then I will be teaching a class in Brighton soon in July in a studio. So any local people, just check on my website for seeing information about that. But yeah, I work with people all over the world actually online. So there's quite a lot of possibility to do more than you think you can do online through video and conversation and stuff.
Brilliant. We'll make sure to include that in the show notes.
Thank you so much, Claire, for joining us today. It's been so lovely having you and
thank you. It's lovely chatting to you.
Thanks for joining us, Claire.